This is Bleav and Georgia Dogs Podcast on the Bleav Podcast Network.
It's time to awaken an entire nation.
I'll be your dog till I die. Between the hedges, looking fly. 90,000 in the stands, I'ma do my dance, make it look fine. Coach put me in the game. UGA, yeah, the name. Yeah, the offense gon' turn up, but the defense gon' win us the game.
Here's your host, Corey Burton.
All right, welcome back. It is another edition of the Bleav in Georgia Dogs podcast on the Bleav Podcast Network, the number one podcasting network for professionals. We are the best podcast, the best Georgia podcast around. So if you haven't seen us, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Bleav in Dogs. Follow me at Coach Burton 36 and follow my co-host, Israel Troop at Troopstar 28. Israel, what's up, man?
What's going on? Coming off a pretty good Sunday here. I'm at my school of Valwood. I had my quarterback went to West Georgia, playing for the great David Dean, who has won multiple championships now here at Valwood State. He's not West Georgia. And my tight end signed with Georgia Southern yesterday. So very happy, Coach. And congratulations to all the signees for National Signing Day and to the new dogs, which we'll get into. Welcome to the family.
Absolutely. Yeah, yesterday was the original National Signing Day, the one that everyone used to look forward to. Now it's the one in December, and this one's kind of irrelevant except for a small handful of stars. And then, of course, now it's being dominated by getting huge commitments from the 2022 class, as Georgia's gotten in the last week or so with Gunnar Stockton and now Bear Alexander. However, and we'll get into that more when we break down our signing day segment here in just a little bit. But first, our show is brought to you by betonline.ag. Guess what, Israel? The Super Bowl is here. And you can get in all the action at betonline.ag. So, Super Bowl, what are we thinking? Are you on the Chiefs bandwagon or are you on the Bucks bandwagon?
I am going to go with the Chiefs. Now, I know it's always hard to bet against Tom Brady, and he is the GOAT by all accounts. But I think the Chiefs just have too many weapons offensively, and I think they would win in the shootout if it came to that. I think the Packers had him on the ropes for a little while there, but, I mean, when you turn the ball over, you know, you give Tom Brady, you know, the ball at the end, and you don't go for it on fourth down. But that's neither here nor there. But – I think the Chiefs pulled this one out this weekend in a very good game this weekend as well.
You know, I want to, for the sake of the show, disagree with you and say, why are you betting against the GOAT, Tom Brady? But actually, I do agree with you, man. I think the Chiefs are just way too explosive. They're kind of like the NFL version of what Bama was this year and what LSU mm-hmm. was last year. They just overwhelm you, and they can score so quickly. They did that to the Bills. They did that to everybody they played against, just about, except for the last, you know, third or fourth of the season when they just kind of shut it down and hit in cruise control. When they're on, they're on. And I have no reason to believe that they won't be. So my question to you now is, when you bet for Super Bowl, are you a props guy? Do you like betting on props?
I haven't had the chance to bet on props, so I think I'm going to take a look at that on Bet Online this week too and see what they got going on.
It's overwhelming, dude. There's like, I think there's 10 props for just the national anthem.
Oh, dang.
So, like, you can bet on if any player kneels. You can bet on if anyone raises their fist. If anyone scoring, any scoring drive is less time than the anthem.
Oh, so, wow. I mean, they got this thing figured out for real.
His first coach shown during the national anthem. Forget or omit a word, you can bet on that if someone leaves that out. Jasmine Sullivan shows cleavage during the anthem.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's an actual line. Okay. Yes is -165, so I guess it's you know, means that she's gonna show a bunch of cleavage. The length of it, the over under is 1:57. So you go under, it's -130. You go over, it's -110. So I guess, you know, you just play that as part of a parlay.
They got it figured out. Boy, they got everything on there.
Hey, there's two more. The first player to be shown during the anthem. There's actually...
Oh, wow.
Yeah. and there's actually two sections of it. Like, you can either bet on Tom Brady or Mahomes or Travis Kelce or Rob Gronkowski. And it's two separate bets. So, like, you can say, you know, Tom Brady and Travis Kelce, and I think you win the bet if Tom Brady, like if you bet on Tom Brady and it shows Tom Brady, but it shows like Travis Kelce first, or I don't know how that one works. I'm going to stay away from that line. So
I mean, they're definitely going to show Tom Brady first.
So I'm not going to read all of these lines to you or all of these props, because there's probably hundreds of them in these folders: first half, second half, commercials, specials, halftime. First half, second half, all kind of props. So Tampa Bay is the first team in history to play for the title on their home field. They do not get to fire the Cannons. It's currently a 3.5-point underdog against Kansas City, looking back-to-back titles for the first time in almost two decades. We made our pick there. We're both doing the Tomahawk Chop and picking the Chiefs. BetOnline has hundreds of props on the game, including game MVP, margin of victory, and even the length of the national anthem, which obviously we just discussed. So, always available online or on your mobile device, visit BetOnline today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook expert. So, that was an interesting read. That was probably the most informative read that we've ever done for BetOnline. So, yeah, I'm gonna head on there. I might do a Super Bowl parlay or a couple. I might do like a game pick and then like a parlay of props and just you know, just see where it gets me. I mean, you know, I might be able to pay off my house, or I might just lose $10. I don't know. We'll see.
I know.
We'll see. So, Israel, the title of this show is "The Dogs Are on a Roll," which after signing day, after what basketball is doing, and after the hires we made on the staff and the raises that these guys got, and the fact that Kelee Ringo was clocked at 22 miles an hour in a recent workout where they're doing, I guess, a bunch of measurements. It's really a great time to be a dog right now. So let's talk basketball. So Georgia's won two games in a row. What is that?
That is called a winning streak.
A winning streak, yes. And most recently, they got their revenge on Auburn. If you remember from a few shows ago, we talked about how disappointed we were. Auburn came in here and just totally demolished us, beat us by 30, 95-77 3 weeks ago, to be exact. But Georgia's now, they got their revenge. They with a 91-86 victory over the Auburn Tigers that pushed the overall record to 11-6. That gets us closer to 500 now at 4-6 in conference. It's the second road win of the year. So it was a game where I think we finally started to kind of figure some things out. I think these guys are growing up a little bit and playing well together. Ty Fagan led the charge with 16 points. Tamani Kamara with 15. P.J. Horn and Sevier Wheeler with 13 apiece. KD Johnson with 12. Justin Kier with 11. And Andrew Garcia, the number one bench player, had also made it seven players in double figures as he he almost made it seven players with double figures, finishing with 9. Kamara had 12 rebounds as well to complete a double-double. So a lot of great stats going on. They shot impressively 43.8% from three-point range, which I guess the launch threes, I guess they were hot on that last night. They out-rebounded the Tigers 40-32, something that they needed to work on. And then they also looks like they've been practicing free throws. They were 18 of 24 from the line. So a lot of great things happening for the Dogs in a bunch of categories, in a bunch of stat categories that they desperately needed to improve. And, of course, over the weekend got a huge win against Ole Miss. So the Dogs are rolling, man. What did you notice from this game? What stood out to you?
Man, I just noticed that they never got their foot off the pedal. They big on Auburn in the beginning and just kept rolling. And that's what we needed. You know, as you can see, as you read out all the points from the guys, we got contributions from everybody, from the starting five, the guys coming off the bench. Everybody contributed, you know, whether they were scoring points, rebounds, you know, things like that. And we got 18 extra points stealing just from shooting free throws, you know. So, and that's what we got to do. You know, like we said in the earlier show, you know, we're small. We're still gelling, you know, as a basketball team. But that was a great team effort, great team win. You can see the improvement. And that carried over to the next game against Ole Miss. And we got another win and close to 500.
Yeah, no doubt. And one of the things I was also impressed with is we were able to convert 24 layups and racking up 52 of the 91 points in the paint. So we're doing a better job at the rim. And judging from Coach Crean's comments, you know, ball movement, back cuts, guys getting in space and just moving around and creating problems for the defense. The whole stand around and watch somebody shoot a three-pointer days, I guess Tom Crean figured that was enough, and he was one of those guys to move, and they did. And it was great. They were able to cut through the defense and either get an open look at a three or get to the rim and convert a layup or something in that regard, and either convert the layup or get fouled, go to the line and create that way. So I was impressed by a lot of the movement.
Oh yeah, I'm telling you, I don't know if they even listen to our podcast or anything, or any basketball fans do, but I'm telling you, that sounds like everything we've been talking about they need to do, and I'll be dog if they don't come out and do it. And I mean, I was very impressed with that Auburn win after coming out and the first game and getting beat the way we did, and to come out this game and pretty much dominate the whole entire game against a very good Auburn team was very impressive. And kudos to the coaching staff for keeping those guys together and keeping them going and fixing some things. And that's what happens. You know, the goal, like I said, we didn't hit the panic button, and the goal was to get better and better each game. And the last two games have showed that we've gotten better and better, and sky's the limit now, you know. And as long as we're keep getting better, we keep getting competitive. I mean, Georgia basketball, men's basketball is going to be right there pecking at Alabama as we move forward.
No doubt. And I think also the goal for Tom Crean is if he can convince Tamani Kamara that every team is Auburn, like make him somehow visualize the other team, no matter who it is. I mean, it could be Gonzaga, or it could be Tift County High School. Doesn't matter. Picture them in an Auburn uniform, because he is he had 12 points back in their first meeting against them. I think he was the lone bright spot in that blowout. And then he had 15 points this past game. He was 5 of 9. He had 12 rebounds, a double-double. He was 4 of 4 from the line. So I think just have him say, okay, you know, scoring-wise, you're playing against Auburn, so go for that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's and then double-doubles – Kamara and Sevier Wheeler have five each this season. So that's that's crazy. I think there's a stat with two Georgia Bulldogs with five plus double doubles in a season since 1979. You had 79-80 with Terry Fair and LaVon Mercer. Terry Fair had 14 double doubles. Dominique Wilkins had seven in 1980-81 season. And then we don't get another one until 1991, 10 years later, with Charles Claxton at six and Kendall Ryan at six. And then it's very, very sporadic after that. The most recent this year with Kamara and Wheeler. So a lot of interesting stats being – a lot of barriers being broken. Sevier Wheeler now is tied for 14th on the all-time Georgia assist list. 31 games with 139 assists right there. And of course, as I mentioned, Georgia had six players score in double digits this past Tuesday. It was the second time the Dogs had had that many in a game this season. They had six players score at least 10 points against Jacksonville. So not exactly the cream of the crop there, but you know, some crazy things going on, but it's obvious they're either listening to us or someone is getting to them, or Coach Crean is just, I don't know, maybe he's back from vacation. I don't know.
I think they're finding their stride, you know. This is a young team. This is
with a lot of transfers, you know, too.
Exactly. And due to COVID and with everything going on, they hadn't really had a chance to gel and, you know, figure out what each other does well. And we're starting to see, you know, and basketball, it's not like football. You know, football, everybody's usually together. You know, during basketball, they get there a little bit later. But, you know, if you're not working together in basketball, all five of those guys on the court have to gel together, you know. So, and you have to figure out each other's strengths. So, I mean, I think, like, right now, I think they're starting to figure everything out. At least that's what it looks like. And like I said, each week is to get better. You might not win the game. You know, we always don't look for moral victories. But, I mean, if you're being competitive and you're getting better and better each week, you know, as a Georgia men's basketball team, I mean, that's great. And that's what you're looking for. That sets you up for the next game and the year after that and the year after that. And I think Coach Green is starting to figure that out. And I think the guys are starting to figure that out. And it finally showed these last two games against Auburn and Ole Miss.
Exactly. And so up next for Georgia is Vanderbilt. And that game is actually the game time was moved in that from, I think it was, 1 to 6 p.m. So tip off for Saturday is now at 6 p.m. Against Vanderbilt. It was originally a 1 o'clock game, but they have changed that tip off. So just be mindful of that. Vanderbilt 0-4 in the conference. I think the last time I talked to Vanderbilt, we had a big commitment. So you want to talk Vanderbilt basketball so we can get another 5-star?
We might need to.
Yeah, and if you look on our social media account, I was actually commenting on how they were going to go winless in conference in both the major sports, men's basketball and football. And just then you interrupted me and you said, "Oh my God, Gunnar Stockton just committed." And that post got almost 10,000 views. So those 10,000 people, come on back.
I know, right? Go and hit that subscribe button while you're at it too.
Yeah, no doubt, man. It's other basketball news. Other sports news, I should say, not just basketball, but Georgia baseball preseason practice is underway. So that season is upon us and rapidly approaching. So I look forward to seeing what they can do in that regard. Georgia women's basketball takes on Alabama tonight. Georgia at 13-4, Bama at 12-4. That'll be a good one for Coach Joni Taylor and her bunch. So we can see if the Lady Dogs are can continue to roll. So their last game, unfortunately, after the Arkansas game, they're on a 2-game skid, losing to LSU and losing to Texas A&M. 60-48 recently to A&M and LSU 60-52. So they got to get back on track.
That's it. You know, the women's basketball team, I don't worry too much about because I mean they just hit a little lull. I think they'll get it back against Alabama tonight, and those girls will keep riding that wave like they've been doing.
Yeah, they're going to have to figure out how to contain Jasmine Walker. She's Alabama's leading scorer and rebounder at 20 points per game and 10 boards a game. So she's averaging a double-double. Jenna Stady, I'm glad I got that name right. I don't know where I got the other pronunciation from, but Jenna, if you're listening, forgive me. She averages 14.3 points a game and 7.5 rebounds a game as well. She leads the Dogs in both categories. Connolly, she is the biggest threat from beyond the arc. She is she leads the team in made threes per game. She drills 1.8 three-pointers per contest. She is 39% on the season. That's great. So for Georgia, they just got to find their groove for the Lady Dogs. They got to find their groove. They got to run again. They got to, you know, they're very successful when they go beyond their average points per game of 71.6. When they reach the 67-point mark, to be exact, they're 13-0 on the year. So if they can just score and score and score and get in a rhythm, they will be fine. So
That's it. They just got to find their stride again. I mean, we talk about the ladies' basketball team and how good they are. You know, and just like, you know, most teams do, you know, they hit a little lull in between there. And, you know, you don't like to see it, but it happens. It's sports, you know. Other team has really good players, too, because they recruit. So, you know, it's just ladies, just get back to what you're doing, get back to the basics, and they'll be fine.
No doubt. So we're going to take a break. We're going to shift gears. Want to introduce you to this company, Just Live. Travis Pastrana, Clay Thompson, and Alex Morgan teamed together to film, or not to film, but to found a wellness company that specializes in CBD. So, enjoy. All right, welcome back. It is National Signing Day. Was yesterday. Really good day for the Georgia Bulldogs. Really good signing period overall. Finished with a top five class in the country. Lots of big name recruits. Most of them came in December, and that's okay. That's great. So we had, I think, actually sixth overall with 20 commits. 20 signees. So that's a good haul for us. But the biggest news of the day came from getting five-star defensive tackle Bear Alexander, who lives up to his nickname, literally and figuratively. He committed to the University of Georgia yesterday on National Signing Day. He's a 2022 defensive tackle, 6'4", 320-pound defensive tackle, to be exact, out of Denton, Texas. So that gives us him and Tyree West. Coach Trey Scott he's building a monster there at defensive tackle.
He is doing a great job, and like we talked about before the show, I mean, Coach Smart's very smart. He knows that they're going to be young on the back end, at least this year and going into next year. So he is building a monster up front with his front seven, and that is a very, very smart idea. And with Tyree West coming in and Bear, I mean, when a kid has a name like Bear and he looks the part, you know that he's a baller, and he committed yesterday. And I mean, sky's the limit for that front seven. And I can't wait to see these guys when they get there.
I know early rankings don't really mean much on recruiting, but currently with that commitment gives us the number one class in the country. So just looking at these recruits, I mean, on early signing period, we talked about a lot of these guys. Not much has changed as far as who we're expecting to jump in the fold. I think losing Terrion Alexander or Terrion Arnold, I should say, not Alexander, I thought he could come in and contribute early, but I think I'm excited about this class nonetheless. I think there's a lot of guys, especially heavy on the defensive backs, that they're going to come in, and I think they're going to contribute. We said that back in December when we talked recruiting. I still hold to that. I think these secondary guys are vital, especially Nylon Green. I think he's going to be the premier guy of this class. Kamari Lassiter is going to be somebody that's going to contribute a lot. And just the thing I noticed is that these guys are taller now. They're bigger. They're taller. They're longer athletes. And I think you need that in the secondary.
Exactly. With the Alabamas of the world, and we're playing Clemson in the first game of the season, that's what you need now. You're starting to find defensive backs are getting bigger. They're taller guys. They're bigger guys. They're just receivers that are playing corner. And that's what you want, guys with great footwork, great ball skills, great hand-eye coordination. So, we got our work cut out of us because they're inexperienced, yes, but the athletic ability you can't take away from them. So all you got to do now is just teach them the fundamentals and technique, and you throw them out there. I mean, and they just let their athletic ability take over. And, with us being young and things like that, I mean, and that's what you want. You want smart guys as well. And I've seen Nylon Green play, and that kid is very good at what he does. And I think this season, I think he'll be contributing early, if not starting his first game against Clemson.
Yeah, no doubt. I think these guys are going to contribute, man. They're going to get thrown to the wolves, and and I'm all for it, man. I'm happy to see these guys. I think they can compete. I don't think Kirby would have signed them otherwise. So let's talk wide receiver. I think that with the signing class we brought in last year at that position, those guys all have contributed in a major way. Even Arian Smith, who missed just about the entire season outside of the last, I think he came back to the South Carolina game. He contributed with a few big catches, but you could see his potential as he kind of got himself back into playing shape. Then Marcus Roseme had a few big games early on before destroying his leg against Florida. And then, of course, Jermaine Burton was the standout. He was the favorite target of both Stetson Bennett and JT Daniels. He was he's a guy that from the slot position he just was all over the place, man. And he was great and contributed everywhere.
He did. And we still got Jackson, and we still got Pickens too coming back. So, I mean, our receiving core is going to be very, very, very good. We got a stable quarterback coming back, and that's always important going into a year post-COVID. We're good. I mean, offensive line, we got some great guys up front. We got some guys that stayed and that are coming back. And we always know that we're always going to have a stable running back. So offensively, I think that we're going to be able to be dynamic explosive, and we're going to be able to put up some points to kind of help that defense in the long run, because they'll defense is going to struggle for a little bit, especially against teams that can throw the ball. But you know, we got some great guys, some athletic guys on defense, and having an offense that can hold on to the ball and put up points is very beneficial when you have a young defense.
Yeah, and you hit the nail square on the head. So of these receivers coming in, you have Adonai Mitchell, and let me pull this list back up. I'm kind of clicking all around here. You have Jackson Meeks from Phoenix City, and you have Adonai Mitchell from Nashville. And then that's it as far as wide receivers. We only took two in this class, which is fine. We got a lot of depth there. Of those two guys, which one do you think will make more of an impact this season as a freshman?
Probably the guy from the Phoenix City kid. They play some really good football. They're just across the border here in Georgia and Alabama, close to Columbus. And they play a lot of Georgia teams, and that is a really good league in Phoenix City. So I think he'll come in and contribute early. But, you know, you never count anybody out. The kid from Nashville is very good. I watched him, watched his highlight tape just yesterday, and I think he'd better come in and do some great things too. The main thing is just making sure you keep these kids positive, you know, because every kid that signs a college scholarship wants to play right now. Sometimes, you know, it doesn't work out like that, especially with the talent that we have coming back. So you just want these guys to come in, learn what to do and compete, and you just never know what happened. We've already seen that coaches aren't scared to put freshmen out there. You know, we're not scared of competition. We want you to go out there. We want you to ball out, you know, but you have to make it up in your mind. That's what you want to do. And remember that this is a team game. You know, you're going to get yours, but you just got to know what to do, how to do it, and everything else to take care of itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with you 100%. I think Meeks is probably a little bit more college ready than Adonai Mitchell is, because I think just what Cane Ridge High School here in Nashville, what they needed out of Mitchell was probably, you know, they just saw him as a shot guy. I don't know that his route tree is refined as it needs to be. He'll have to come in and do some work in preseason camp, and he'll be a guy that works his way up the depth chart, maybe contributes on special teams and things like that. Jackson Meeks, watching him, I just think he's a little bit more college ready. That's not a knock on Mitchell, because they're both four-star guys, and they have different skill sets. And I think we will need Jackson Meeks' skill set more so than Adonai Mitchell. Also, what I really like is signing Brock Bowers at tight end. 6'4", 220 kid out of Napa, California. It was once thought that we were going to get Eric Gilbert, the transfer from LSU, but come to find out, we have Brock Bowers. That's a tongue twister. We have Brock Bowers on the roster to go along with Darnell Washington and then John Fitzgerald as well. So I think we got a pretty good tight end room. I don't think we're going to miss Eric Gilbert too much. So, you know, Washington really came on at the tail end of the season. We said all along, he looked like LeBron James coming in. He got in Coach Sinclair's weight program for a season, or as much of it as he could, given the COVID situation. That kid is going to be a monster when they can finally get back to a normal schedule, which Georgia's already back working out now. So I'm excited to see kind of some of these early enrollees and then some of these, you know, from the last signing class who didn't really get like a full authentic training program, to see what they're like with a full year under their belt in the strength and conditioning program. So the tight end position to me is going to be really good. I'm excited about Brock Bowers.
I'm excited about it too. I mean, most people don't understand, as an offensive coordinator, you want a tight end. You want a tight end, one that you can flex out, one that you can put in line and make blocks and things like that. So the dynamic of the tight end has changed from just the power eye, block down, kick out, and things like that. You have to have a tight end that's athletic, that can go and get the ball. You can put him on one-on-one situations, whether it's a linebacker or a free safety and things like that. And, I mean, with Washington, I mean, you can put him on anybody, you yeah. know. And would have been nice to have Gilbert, of course. But with Gilbert, you know, he wanted to go somewhere where he could play right now. And right now with Florida losing their top tight end, I think that was appealing to him, and congratulations to him on his new school, and I hope he does well. But, you know, we can't worry about that. We got to worry about the guys we got. We got some really good ones. The kid from California, I mean, I love everything about him. You know, now you get those two tight end sets where you got two dynamic guys that can go out there and catch the football. You know, you got a guy at 6'7", going out there. You got another one that's, what, like 6'5", right behind him?
Yeah.
You know, that you have to atone for. So, I mean, using the usage of the tight end in the SEC is huge. And look at Alabama. I mean, they have a tight end that can run a dang 4.5, you know, and he's like 6'4". That's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
You're looking at a wide receiver that's just a bigger body. So, I mean, it's great to see.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, I think it's somebody that's dynamic and can do well with space. I think that, and he's a better inline blocker too, I think. And so he's kind of a kid that can do a lot of different things. I mean, he's not going to be the athlete that Kyle Pitts is, but I mean, looking at his highlights, man, if you look at the first play of his highlights here on rivals.com, which is actually his huddle reel, the dude like lines up as a wide receiver, runs a delayed slant, kind of like a pick route where you have two fades going and he comes up underneath it. He catches it. Mm-hmm. He pulls away from some people. So, you know, it's, you know, the thought of the big, slow space eating tight end, that's kind of over. You know, I think you're getting a kind of a new wave of tight ends that are a little bit leaner, can run. And some of these guys are, you know, obviously are better blockers than others, but you know, I think that he does bring that element to the table, and I think Darnell Washington is becoming a better blocker as well. And, of course, you know, Darnell Washington didn't get on the field a lot or as much as you would think he did because Trey McKitty was somebody that came in as a grad transfer, and he really contributed when he was healthy. And he was just named the top tight end prospect in the Senior Bowl. Now, obviously, obviously Kyle Pitts is not in the Senior Bowl because he's not a senior, but, you know, at that game, that's a pretty high honor. So I think it's, you know, the tight end position has been well thought of since Todd Hartley took over, and you're seeing a lot of production there. So I'm excited for that, and of course I'm excited for the offensive lineman, Amarius Mims. I think he can come in and contribute. I think he's got just as good of a shot as any of these other guys at the right tackle spot. You know, Jamari Sawyer coming back at left tackle, that obviously brings a lot of experience to that position. So it's going to be a battle at that tackle spot. We have a lot of great depth at that position. Then you have Micah Morris coming in from Camden. And you also have Dylan Fairchild coming in from, let me see the high school here. He's coming in from West Forsyth as a guard. Mm-hmm. So he's going to fill one of those guard positions. Hopefully you like to think. And then Cedric Van Pran looks to be the favorite at center. So the offensive line is in great shape now too, despite losing Ben Cleveland.
Yes, they are.
And Justin Schaefer's coming back. So
the kid from Camden, I watched him play when they played Parkview. This kid played both sides of the ball, defensive tackle. And he played some guard and tackle on offense. And I mean, he played the entire game. I think he had a small injury. He had a knee injury or something, but he never came out the game. And the way that this kid moves is absolutely phenomenal. And I think he'll be able to contribute as soon as he gets there, you know, whether it be guard, whether it be tackle. So, I mean, he's a big, beautiful kid too.
Yeah.
You know, so,
he'll be having those heavy belly,
exactly. Having those heavy bellies up front that can move people, you know, create holes for our backs and create protection for our quarterback to get the ball off. I mean, that's very important. And getting guys with size and with experience and things like that, I mean, it's great. Great job by our recruiting staff and by the coaches of staying in contact with these guys, especially during COVID. And I mean, kudos to the coaches, because I mean, during COVID, there was no visits, no at-home visits or anything like that. Basically, just Zoom calls and talking to them on Twitter and things like that. So I think our coaching staff did a great job of staying in contact with these guys and making sure that they stayed dogs.
Yeah, no doubt. And it was probably one of the best recruiting jobs since he came in 2016 and finished with the 9th overall class. So I'm excited. I'm excited about the future of this position. This class, I think, is going to be just as good as any. Got a lot of great linebackers as well. I want to talk about a few other classes. Do you remember talking about Auburn? They finished 43rd. That was three spots behind the Kansas Jayhawks.
Oh, man. But here's the thing, though. They waited so long to make a coaching move and things like that. And
yeah.
Coach Harsin had to come in and get his staff together. And, you know, they just lost T. Will to Miami, who's a very, very good recruiter.
Yeah.
Dang good linebacker coach as well.
That was a bad choice.
So, I mean, it's one of those things where, all right, we got our stuff in now. Now this next year, you kind of got to rebuild and roll. But, I mean, you know, Auburn's Auburn. I think they'll be back to, you know, getting the guys that they need and that they want. But, I mean, when you make a coaching change that late, and you got to understand these kids, you know, although they love the school, they love their position coaches. And, I mean, when you get rid of a guy like, you know, T. Will, you know, and I don't know if Coach Garner's there, Coach. And,
no, he's not.
You know, you get rid of a guy like Coach G,
yeah,
you know,
Coach
who is an Auburn alum, you know. So, I mean, it's like, man, well, what are you doing? You think, what are you doing? But in order to change the culture, you know, sometimes those things have to happen and you hate it. And I know those guys will bounce back and do well. But, you know, kids love their position coaches. You know, I love Coach Easton and Coach Ball and Coach Bubba and all those guys. So, I mean, had they left, you know, it might have been a different story for me as well. So, you know, and that's what you got to think about, especially when you're coming in as a new coach and what's going on and how are they communicating with players and things like that. So, you know, they'll be back and they'll be fine.
Yeah, no doubt. So you look at winners, Adam Gorney and the Rivals recruiting staff. Obviously, they put together the list of the winners and the losers. For Auburn to finish with that 43rd class, they're actually considering that a win. So considering the fact they made a change so late and the fact that they couldn't go out on the road and recruit, they still finished keeping Tarvis Dawson, Juwan Gatston, and beating out the 78th ranked South Carolina Gamecocks. Georgia, they're considering a win. Kentucky, they're considering winners on signing day. They signed Trevin Wallace, the four-star linebacker, was their premier guy. Michigan, Notre Dame, and Ole Miss, they're considering winners. So they're saying most of the SEC schools finished really well. And USC, getting Corey Foreman, Damani Jackson, Fabian Ross, and Rayshon Davis. Then again, here's the losers, Michigan State, LSU. Losing out on Logan Diggs, losing out on Cole Lord at the quarterback position. Nebraska, you hate to see it for Scott Frost. It's going south in a hurry for him.
Yeah.
So those are a few of the losers. Of course, South Carolina, they finished 78th. I don't think anybody was shocked by that. And then, Vanderbilt, I don't even know where they finished, but here's the final team rankings. Alabama number one, Ohio State, Oregon, A&M, LSU, and Georgia rounding out the top six, which I don't know how they considered LSU losers in that article. I think it's kind of backwards. Clemson, USC, Michigan, and Notre Dame finished out the top 10. Florida finishing just outside of the top 10. Some noticeable people in the top 20, you have Miami at 12, Wisconsin at 14, North Carolina at 15, Tennessee still finished 17th ahead of Ole Miss. Nebraska finished 19th, so for all the failures they had, they still finished 19th. Maryland coming in at 20, Missouri at 21, Mississippi State finishing with a top 25 class. We didn't think that was possible. And Arkansas finishing with a top 25 class. So outside of the top 25, I think Florida State sits there at 28. That's surprising in a bad way. Then you have Vanderbilt at 34. Just ahead of them at 33 is Kentucky. And I think that's – and then Auburn at 43, Georgia Tech at 48. And – I think you have to scroll all the way down to 78th. There's a three-way tie at 78 with South Carolina, Jackson State, and App State. And, of course, finishing dead last, I guess they only ranked 100 teams. Finishing dead last is East Carolina. So anything stand out with those final rankings? This is rankings according to Rivals.com.
I mean, with everything that kind of went on with COVID, those guys couldn't get out and recruit like they wanted to. And I mean, you know, you got to understand that the top 10 are the ones that kids want to go to. They want to win championships and things like that. So, you look at it, you know, rankings are just rankings. These kids still have to come in and produce, and do a job for their team. And, you know, it's just one of those wait and see what happens. You know, rankings are rankings. They just put them on and let people talk about it. And, you know, you just wait and see what those guys can do, because that three-star guy can end up being a baller and, you know, and do great things for his university. So we'll just wait and see when this season comes up. Hopefully we get to have a spring, those early signees, and they get to have a normal offseason. So they got those guys get to come in and see what see where they contribute and things like that. So congratulations to all the signees and congratulations to all universities. And now it's time to go to work.
Absolutely. And as I almost die, there were some rumors. A&M actually got themselves a great running back, LJ Johnson, a four-star kid. He committed to them over Longhorns, LSU, and Oklahoma. Huge in-state grab for A&M. So I think that seeing Isaiah Spiller's success kind of bolstered that position a little bit. So that kind of – well, the fact that A&M is now – like as quickly as they flipped around, because last year it was thought that they're going to try to figure out how to buy out Jimbo Fisher – now they finished on the cusp of a playoff, and now they're flipping four-star recruits from LSU, Oklahoma, and Texas for in-state kids. Now they're becoming the premier program in-state in the state of Texas, and they're finishing with a top-five recruiting class. So I'm kind of surprised at A&M overall, just how – not that they could do it, because they've always had that potential, just the speed in which they did it.
Yeah, it just goes to your body of work. I mean, outside of this year, you know, Texas A&M's been basically just mediocre. And like you just stated, you know, they're trying to figure out how can we get rid of Jimbo Fisher. Then this year he turns around. He was basically a win away from being in the playoff, you know. So as long as they keep progressing and keep doing well, Jimbo keep getting guys. And to be in Texas, I think Georgia has the best football, in my opinion, then Texas and then Alabama. You know, that's just because I'm a Georgia guy and I see it all the time. But, you know, to win your state and to keep guys that are in your state home, and Texas has some really, really good football. And to keep those guys in state and at your university, I mean, is a big key. And I think they're starting to figure that out. And I think once they really take hold of the state of Texas, I think they're going to be really, really dangerous here soon.
Yeah, and so I think it's just odd to see any SEC team really out of the top 30. But I think some of these guys that flipped their coaches actually had a pretty good day. They got South Carolina got Ladarian Craig. He was a three-star kid that they didn't offer him until early last week, and he committed. Tennessee pulled a three-star JUCO offensive lineman, Jeremiah Crawford. This past Wednesday, so a literally big piece to their puzzle after losing Wanya Morris and transfer to Oklahoma and losing Trey Scott to the NFL. So Vanderbilt, they got a few guys to stick around. Three-star linebacker Michael Mincy being that one guy that thought was going to be flipping to Auburn to follow Derek Mason. He stayed with Vanderbilt. So lots of surprising things in the SEC, and recruiting is always that way. If you follow recruiting, it twists and turns like the most twisted roller coaster at Six Flags.
Exactly. And you know what's going to happen now. One of my receivers here from Valdosta signed with Jackson State and Lee County, who has become a national power, Byron Hobson. Ended up signing with Jackson State too. So now you got the transfer portal and all that stuff going on. You also have to look at these HBCUs who are coming in as well that are going to start getting these kids. And I mean, for a kid to go to Jackson State, I mean, that is a four-star kid. Says a lot to what Deion Sanders is putting into that program, what he's doing. And you got to understand, these coaches are going to start figuring it out. And then now it's going to get really good because you got all these schools competing for all these top players now. And it's going to be – college football is going to be fun real soon and real fast.
No doubt. And going back to Georgia's staff, did a tremendous job of recruiting and really getting a lot of things done early, which for Georgia fans, it's not really that exciting because you get your job done early and you're kind of just watching everybody else. And on the surface, that doesn't seem very exciting, but then you look at the list of guys that we got and some of the guys we got and a lot of the guys we got for 2022, it's exciting. And so a lot of these guys deserve raises, of course. There's some big raises that were announced. Most notably, Dan Lanning was bumped from 1.2 to 1.7 annually. He got rewarded for turning down opportunities at University of Texas and probably some other ones as well. Running game coordinator and running backs coach Del McGee got a raise. He goes from 800,000 from 625,000. So he's reaching a million. Tight ends coach Todd Hartley will now make 450,000. I don't know where he was a year ago, but he's been raised to 450.
I think he was at like 300 or something like that. And I mean, when these guys come in, they do a good job recruiting, and you see their body of work and see the production they put on the field, you got to pay your coach. That's one thing I give Dabo Swinney. Dabo Swinney pays his assistants, and that's why they stick around so long. That consistency of coaches, and if you pay them, they will stay, and then you will continue to get top recruits and top players because they know that stability is always there.
Exactly, and I think Kirby Smart has taken note of that because this is probably the most aggressive round of raises that he's given since he's been there. And this is probably the first time that we haven't had a significant turnover and guys leaving for lateral positions and things like that. I think the only guy leaving was Charlton Warren for an upgrade, which, I mean, nobody would blame him for that. The new coach, defensive backs coach Jamil Adai, will be making $500,000 after coming over from West Virginia. No clue what he made at West Virginia, but that's got to be a bump in pay. And, of course, the worst kept secret in college football, the new official defensive analyst, Will Muschamp. With this salary, he may never coach on the field again. He will be making $300,000 to be. Georgia will pay him $300,000 annually to be the new defensive analyst, in addition to getting the $13 million from South Carolina. So he may never coach again, and he may be okay with that. So I'm excited for these coaches. I'm excited for these guys. Getting huge raises, well-deserved, well-earned for all the work that they put in the recruiting trail as well as on the field with developing the current roster. Kirby Smart obviously is learning a few things each and every season. He learned from Ed Orgeron that I've got to hire a badass offensive coordinator so that I can score some points. Check, he's done that with Todd Monken, and he's built down the line actually with Buster Faulkner as a quality control. Then he realized, okay, well, how do you retain staff? Well, you pay them well. Dabo Swinney pays them well, so he's made a commitment there as well. Replacing some of the off the field staffers that come and go, those guys come and go year in and year out. That's a normal thing. So those guys get elevated to on the field roles. So you're happy with that. So any thoughts on the staff, anything that surprised you?
I think that paying Dan Lanning was very smart. Cause you gotta understand he's a young coach. I think he's just about a year or two older than me. He's a young coach, but he's already being hailed as one of the top coaches in the nation. You know, he was up for the DC job at Texas. He's been also named in the UCF job as well. So you were going to lose him one way or another. But I think they did a great job of keeping him there. I think he's happy being there, and you got to pay him. And Coach McGee, I mean, what he does is you can't top. You know, he's a great guy. He's been in high school, so he knows the high school level of getting kids and talking to kids. And he's been a great recruiter for us, and especially managing that room with so many five-star guys and so much talent in that room. He's done a great job of doing that, and just our staff in general. You know, once, like I said, Alabama changes coaches like we change underwear, but, you know, like with Clemson, you know, we got Venables and Coach Elliott and things like that. You want guys, if they're going to take a job, you want them to take jobs where they're going up, not a lateral move.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, and when you pay him, and you got good assistants like that, I mean, you got to keep him, you got to pay him, and I think Dabo does a great job, and I think a lot of coaches are starting to see that, so that's why you're seeing all of these new contracts and more money being poured into it, because you have to keep good coaches at your program in order to be great.
No doubt, and you know, you gotta pay those guys, you gotta get them on board, you gotta get them feeling good, you gotta create that great staff culture, which some guys do it really well. Some guys don't. And the Nick Saban Academy of Coaching It's a very strenuous. He does compensate you really well, but the level of work, you come in, you grind for a year or two, and then you move on. Typically, if you're down, you get back on your feet, and then you bolt for promotion. So cultures like Dabo's, where those guys don't want to leave, they're comfortable, they have a great working environment, and they're getting paid. Places like Oklahoma that rarely lose coaches, great staff culture. And then, of course, you have, places like Tennessee, who's looking for their third head coach in like the last 5 years. So not a great place. Hopefully Heupel will provide some stability there. So I just thought that was interesting on just interesting talking point for the off season. One last thing before we go, they clocked the fastest people at each position. So who do you think would be the fastest running back?
Ooh, I gotta go with Cook.
I think you're right. I don't know his exact numbers. But I think you're right there. Arian Smith was the top wide receiver. The top DB was Keely Ringo at 22.3 miles per hour. Arian Smith with 21.9.
I love that Ringo kid. Man, I love him.
I hope he comes in. I hope he's healthy and comes in and really just gets after it. So, N'Kobe Dean, fastest linebacker. Adam Anderson, fastest outside linebacker. Trevon Walker, obviously the fastest defensive lineman. And looking at Broderick Jones as the fastest offensive lineman. So that could pay some dividends.
Heavy belly, baby. You got to love it.
Yeah, boy. Getting them in. I'd like to see those numbers. And then 2018 five-star defensive back Brendan Radley Hiles from Oklahoma. He is in the portal.
I saw that yesterday, and I saw Coach Lincoln Riley talk about him. And I don't know the dynamic of what's going on with that, but that's another one that's going to come in, and wherever he goes is going to be very good. Because I mean, he was basically the only person that didn't get thrown to, his side whenever he was covering people. So whoever picks him up, Georgia, is going to be very, very pleased with what he does on the field.
Yeah, no doubt. He had some stats he had from a year ago: 115 tackles, 9 TFLs, 11 passes defended, and 3 interceptions. So it means they didn't really attack him all that much in the passing game. But he was,
and he's a very physical corner. You got 100 or something tackles at corner. Come on now.
Yeah, he's 5'10".
He's
going to
stick his face in there.
Yeah, he's not scared, not one bit. So, Israel, any last words? There's I got a text alert while we were recording from our sponsor, Bet Online. They're offering 2 free Super Bowl contests that are live at Bet Online, $5,500 props and $5,500 score predictors, cash prizes. Play now. Are you going to join that? I'm going to join that.
I think I am. That sounds like something I can give you a part of right there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm still waiting on Kansas City Steaks. If you're out there, I'm still waiting. Still looking at my front door. still waiting. But Israel, that's going to do it for us, man. Anything you want to leave us with?
No, like I said at the beginning of the show, congratulations to all the guys that signed. Now, since signing day is over, now we concentrate on graduation. Make sure, number one, stay out of trouble, because that's the one thing that can hinder everything that you've done can be taken away just by doing something stupid. And make sure you take care of your work in the classroom and graduate, and we can't wait to see you guys on campus.
Absolutely. I echo that point 1,000%. That's going to do it for us here. Georgia basketball is on a roll. Check them out Saturday against Vanderbilt. Not at 1 o'clock, but at 6 o'clock. A lot of great things afoot. Again, if you want to join in, give us a rating, leave us a review, subscribe to our channel on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you find your podcast, you can find us. Give us some feedback at Believe in Dogs on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, at TroopStar28 on Twitter and Instagram, at CoachBurton36 on Twitter, at burton.corey on Instagram. So find us, leave us some feedback, follow us, give us a rating, subscribe, all of that good stuff. We are the Believe in Georgia Dogs podcast, presented by betonline.ag on the Believe Podcast Network. For Israel, I'm Corey Burton. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back next time. Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.